There is a well-known date on the Jewish calendar, and that is the 4th of Iyar, Dalet Iyar. And we observe this date of Dalet Iyar both in Israel and also in Chutz Laretz as a somber day, a solemn day, a serious day, a meaningful day, and it is referred to as Yom HaZikaron, as I'm sure many of you are familiar. Yom HaZikaron, the day that we remember, and for many of you, it is a day that we have observed here in Chicago together with our Kollel. Each year we have an evening, a special evening program, and it is devoted to remembering, to memorializing the fallen soldiers of Tzahal and the security forces, as well as the victims of terror. And one thing to wonder that is worth considering is, why is it that Yom HaZikaron is observed on Dalet Iyar? Let's put that in the background. In thinking about the Makom, the place that we're going to visit today, it's not a city, it's a kibbutz, it's a region, and as you know, we are going today, please God, to visit Kfar Etzion. So now, if you look on your screen, you're gonna hopefully see, I hope you can see it now, the I hope you can see the Google Earth, where we are looking now from above down on Gush Etzion and Kfar Etzion. I'm going to turn the map a little bit so we're looking north. And now when we zoom out, you see many of you, I suspect many of you have been to this area of Israel. Many of you have been to Kfar Etzion or to the Gush Etzion area. This is the mountainous area, which you see here on the map. This is right next to Kfar Etzion is Alon Shvut, which houses a beautiful Jewish community, including Yeshivat Har Etzion. Nearby is Elazar. There's Efrat. Many of us know people who live in Elazar and Efrat. There's Bat Ayin. Here's Rosh Tzurim. But if you circle out even farther, you could put this area in a greater context. Whoop, I just lost it. Here is Kfar Etzion. But now, if you take a step back, you could see that Kfar Etzion is not just this mountainous area just south of Yerushalayim. It's actually situated in a fascinating geographic area. Maybe you could call it a topographic area, because Kfar Etzion and the Etzion region, which you see here, I'm circling with my mouse, is between the Shvela, which is down here. So, for example, if you go all the way to the edge of the Shvela, you're going to get to the coast. You see Ashdod, and then Ashkelon is here, Yavne. This area was controlled in the times of Tanakh by the Plishtim. And, for example, the famous battle between Goliath and David HaMelech took place in the Shvela here on the left. So to the left, to the west of Gush Etzion, of Kfar Etzion, is the Shvela. And to the right of Gush Etzion, you see, is Midbar Yehuda, Tekoa, the home of the Navi Amos, and out into the desert. So right situated, right in between the Shvela, which is this plains to the west, and the desert to the east, just south of Yerushalayim, which is to the north, is this area called Etzion, or Kfar Etzion, this one specific kibbutz that we're visiting, and it's known today as the Gush Etzion region. I couldn't see you while I was sharing this thing. George, could you see the map while I was zooming out? Great. Okay. Great. You could see. So this is the place that we're going to visit today, and I suspect many people here have been there and have seen it. This place, as you saw on the map, of Kfar Etzion, is right on the path. If you were walking, let's say, from Hebron up to Yerushalayim, walking through that mountainous area, you would be following in the footsteps of Avram Avinu, of Yitzchak, of Yaakov, of their families. And that is what is referred to today. Many tour guides will talk about this as the Derech Ha'avot, the path of the forefathers. Derech Ha'avos, meaning that's where Avram Avinu went up. If you can imagine, he walked up. Yaakov Avinu walked up. They walked back and forth. This was the path that was trodden by our avos, and we are still trotting the same path of the Derech Ha'avos. In the plantation scroll of Kibbutz Kfar Etzion of January 1944, they write the following. 2,000 years ago, these slopes reverberated with the sounds of a multitude of trees and life that teemed all about. What are they referring to? To the Avos HaKadoshim, to Avram and Sarah who lived here, they walked here. If you remember, Avram is separating. Imagine, where is Lot going? Lot is going down past the desert. He's going down to Sodom, right? Avram Avinu is living in Hebron, Aner Eshkol Mamre. These are real places, the same places. So when they founded this kibbutz, Kfar Etzion, they say today they stand bleak and desolate. Bleak and desolate is not just about the land, but think about the context of when this is being written, and people in Israel by this time did know what was going on. January 1944. We have taken this oath upon settling in Kfar Etzion. We shall not rest nor know peace until we cast off the shame of barrenness from these highlands, until we shall cover them with fruit and forest trees, which together shall give forth, etc. And he quotes the pasuk in Yechezkel of Hari Yisrael, the mountains should give forth, which the Gemara says in Sanhedrin is the siman of the Geula. So this is the location of this kibbutz and the founding in 1944. But what I want to focus on for a minute before we get really started is that there's actually a history of this kibbutz or in this area. Because for hundreds of years, for centuries, this area of Eretz Yisrael was not settled by Jews. But there were actually multiple attempts before 1944 to resettle this area. The first, it was in 1927, a group of Yerushalmi Jews bought land from local Arabs to establish a little village. They called it Migdal Eder, which is based on a pasuk in Bereishis. But unfortunately, in 1929, many of us are familiar exactly what happened at that time. The riots that broke out, they affected many Jewish communities, not just Hebron. But that was the end of this settlement, which of course is north, right, like you saw on the map, north of Hebron. In 1934, there was a second attempt to establish an agricultural settlement in this area. But that too, unfortunately, during the riots of 1936, also suffered the same fate, and it was dismantled. The third attempt was launched in April of 1943, coincidentally or not so much. It was around the same time as the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. And finally, they established 1943 into 1944 this new settlement in this area. As you saw, the mountainous area, and many of you, if you've driven there, you know this is not such an easy place to live, right? It's kind of like craggy, scraggly rocks. It's not smooth. The winters are very harsh in this area of the mountains, what we call Hare Yehuda, the Judean hills. But they decide they were going to found a kibbutz in this place. Many of these were European Jews, and they settled there. They established this kibbutz. So what we see is that to create this makom, it required establishing, but then there was a setback. There was a destruction, dismantling. Building, but then dismantling. Building and dismantling. And that was not the only time. They established this kibbutz in 1943, 1944, and several families come to live there, including the family of a man who I'd like to introduce you to today. He is the subject of this very interesting book. It is called Hanan Porat, hence the man I want to tell you about. Hanan Porat, Sipur Chayav by Chagai Huberman, who's a known journalist in Israel. This is, just parenthetically, this is an important argument to keep in mind, if let's say you have a spouse who gets irritated at the number of books that you buy, but you have a mantra, certain books will come in handy one day and you never know when. Well, guess what? This book is living proof because it's been on my shelf for, I don't want to say how long, but just for this year it was kedai to buy this book. So you can't have too many books. That's just an editorial comment. Let's get back to the shir. Just saying. So this book, which I happened upon in a bookstore in Israel, which I love, called Dabri Shir, which if you are looking for an extra book and no one is watching you, you go to the Tachan Merkaz. There are several stores in different places, but if you go to the Tachan Merkaz in Yerushalayim, the central bus station, you go to the top floor all the way back near the bathrooms, behind like a post is a little bookstore that has terrific svarim, amazing. And this is not a paid infomercial. I'm just telling you, this is where you can find this book. Anyway, so this book is about a man who I encountered in my own life when I was in Israel and studying yeshiva. His name is Hanan Porat. Hanan Porat is literally a larger-than-life figure in the history of modern Israel. Some of you may have heard of him. Some may of you have ever met him. They have beautiful... What's that? Some of the... Oh, you got a trap from him. Awesome. So this is a picture of him when he was a child growing up in Kfar Etzion. There are lots of amazing pictures, and the life story that he led was incredible. So his parents, he was an infant when his parents moved to Kfar Etzion in 1943, and they were there for several years as one of these pioneers religious family from Eastern Europe. The parents were Polish. Okay. In January 1948, the situation in the Gush, and this is what they describe in the book that Hanan Porat himself remembers from this time, the situation was very challenging because on Choftet November, on the 29th of November 1947, when the United Nations announced that there was going to be the creation of a new state or two states, there was going to be a state of Israel, well, the local Arabs were not very happy about this, and they never accepted the reality of a Jewish state. And they began to harass Jews living in different areas. If you remember when we spoke about the kibbutz, the little kibbutz Nachshon, and the whole idea of Nachshon, and the Mivtza Nachshon, and the purpose of breaking the siege of Yerushalayim, that was during this time, because it was pre-state, but the Arab marauders were cutting off supplies getting to Yerushalayim, and the same thing was happening in the little kibbutz of Kfar Etzion, which by this time had three other kibbutzim in this area, this gush. The word gush means a chunk, it's a chunk of land. So the chunk of land called Etzion is referred to as Gush Etzion. So there was a lot of tension in this area because of Arab militias and marauders who were harassing and sometimes murdering, lo aleinu, Jews and affecting Jewish neighborhoods and Jewish settlements, these little kibbutzim and moshavim. So it was decided in January, Hanan Porat describes in his book, that the vast majority of the people who were living there, the women and the children, were going to be taken away from the kibbutz and sent to live in Yerushalayim. They went to Yerushalayim. They stayed there for several months. Several of the men were also not in the kibbutz because they were off doing different things, including the father of Hanan Porat. But most of the men remained behind. Over the next couple of months, things deteriorated. And finally, on May 13th, 1948, there was an assault by Arab and Jordanian fighters on the area of Gush Etzion. This is after the massacre of the Lamed Hay. Some of you are familiar with the famous story of the Lamed Hay, the 35 Jewish warriors, the soldiers. There was no IDF at that time, but they were the Jews who were trying to break the siege in the Gush and deliver supplies, who were ambushed and murdered. So many of you are familiar with the Lamed Hay. They're called Lamed Hay because there were 35 of them. And then there's the whole episode with Rabari Levin and the burial. That's not for today. But this is after the massacre of the Lamed Hay. On May 13th, 1948, there was a radio transmission that was sent to Yerushalayim, to the women and the children, that said, Hamalka Nafla, Malka Nafla, the queen had fallen. What does it mean, the queen had fallen? It means that the settlements, the Jews and everyone who had been living, all the men who were in Kfar Etzion and the neighboring areas had all been murdered. Even those who had put up a white flag to surrender, they had been gunned down. There was only a handful of survivors who were taken by the Jordanians as POW, so to speak. There wasn't a formal war yet, but they were taken away by the Jordanians. But the vast majority of them had been murdered. What happens? There becomes a whole movement of children, wives, almanas, and yesomim of this place of Kfar Etzion, who are now displaced and who remain banded together, even though they started by moving to Yafo, but then they had to disperse in different places. They remain connected to each other. And even though Hanan Porat was a young boy at the time and his parents had both survived, he kind of became the father figure of this young group of orphans. And he became the champion, the pioneer of the mission to return to Kfar Etzion. So I thank Dov Carroll for lots of references, and especially this one. I'm going to share with you now a talk that he gave, just a quick snippet so you could get to see the face of this giant, this modern Israeli hero. I think he was probably controversial for some. We're pulling it up. Let's see if it works. Okay, it's coming up right now. This is the anniversary of the 40th anniversary of the establishment of the yeshiva. Now, remember, the yeshiva that we referenced before of Yeshivat Har Etzion, which is in Alon Shavuot today, that many of you are familiar with, that yeshiva was originally founded in Kfar Etzion, before Alon Shavuot ever existed. It was first in Kfar Etzion. It was founded by Hanan Porat, along with a few others, and this is his recollection. I just want you to see his face. What was his vision? This is Hanan Porat, and what he was saying in translation is that after so much blood was spilled in this place, meaning the massacre of Jews, of those pioneers, on May 13th, 1948, now the mountains of the area of Hebron are zakaim. They are meritorious. They get to merit to see the rebuilding of Torah and listen to the words of Torah. Now, there's a whole nother story about this, which we can share some of the videos about the founding of the yeshiva in particular, which took place in Kfar Etzion. But this is part of the same narrative, that there was destruction, there was dam, and now there is the flowering of Torah. There is the voice of Torah. Hanan Porat worked tirelessly, and there are several other references to this in this book. For some of you are familiar, Nechama read the whole thing. I didn't get through the whole thing, but some of the episodes here are very, very fascinating, describing the founding of Kfar Etzion and talking about Hanan Porat, who later became a very famous paratrooper in the Six-Day War and was an incredible activist for what became known as Gush Emunim. Gush Emunim means the people of Emuna, of rebuilding the Gush, of settling in these Mekomos HaKdoshim, in these places not just in Yehuda, but also in the Shomron, other biblical places which are beyond what people call the Green Line. But this is an interesting pattern, at least to me. And that's what may be one of the things that we can think about when we reflect on Kfar Etzion. That Kfar Etzion is an example. It's the living, breathing personification of the pattern, of the challenge, of the reality of destruction and building and rebirth, which truthfully has its roots in the creation of the world itself. There's a medrash in Koheles Rabbah. Medrash says, "Esakol ya asa yafa biito." Everything HaKadosh Baruch Hu made correctly, aptly, appropriately, biito, in its time. What does it mean, in its time? So the first comment to the Medrash is, the world came into existence exactly at the moment that it was appropriate, not before. Lo haya roi libanos, it wasn't appropriate to create the world before the moment of creation, and not afterwards, exactly at that time. But then Rabbi Abbo says, Viter, I'm Rabbi Abbo, Mikan, from here, Shahaya HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that the Ribono Shel Olam was Bone Olamos Umachrivan. He was building worlds and destroying them. Ad Shabara Elu Va'omar Dein Hanyali Yason Lo Hanyali. Until he said, these are worthy, these are not. You know, people ask questions about dinosaurs and prehistoric and this and that. The Medrash says, wait a second, you have to understand. There were worlds before. The Ribono Shel Olam built worlds and he destroyed them. And he built and he destroyed and he built and he destroyed. Which is so interesting. That somehow the path of creation, the path of Bria, has within it part of that process also the process of Churban, of destruction. Notice how this is not just the process of the initial creation, which on some level is partly to tell us that this is a mystery. The Ribono Shel Olam, the entire idea of creation, Rav Kook writes in a letter that anything you read in Bereishis, it's a total mystery. It's a mystery wrapped in a mystery. Right? We don't know anything about the Borei Olam himself. We don't know anything about why his Ratzon was to create the world, how he created the world. All of that is shrouded in mystery. So this too is a mystery. Why it has to be that to create, there must be beforehand a process of destruction, of pain, of challenge, of darkness. But that is evidently what the Ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu was, that for our world, that's how it should exist. And it's not just true for the way that the world was created initially. It's also true for the process of the unfolding of the redemption or the fulfillment of the vision of this world. There is an interesting sefer from Rav Chaim Drukman, who many of you are familiar with from the world of Bnei Akiva as a prominent Rosh Yeshiva. So I'm sharing with you now a little piece from his sefer called Kima Kima, where he collects Mar Makomos, an idea that we spoke about when we spoke about Reb Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer and the idea of the slow, methodical rebuilding of the land of Israel a little bit at a time. When we spoke about Stay Boker, Boker being light, and how in the morning the Yerushalmi tells us that the light comes gradually, la'at la'at, a little bit at a time, kim'ah, kim'ah. That light of the redemption that we're, please God, hopefully going to see the full shining soon, but right now we're in that process, right? We spoke about this in the idea of Boker, Stay Boker, and Ben-Gurion, the process of redemption. Well, what precedes that light? What precedes the morning light is the darkness, is the Lila. And that's what Rav Drukman here collects several ma'amorim. Quotes here on the top, you see on the page. She'en lecha afila gedola yosem e'osa shas mucha l'shachar. Not only is it that darkness precedes light, there's no darker darkness than the late night darkness that precedes the light. V'hoya zaracha, quotes in Shmos Rabba, ka'afa ha'aretz. When we get ad afa ha'aretz, when we are down like the dirt, then ufaratza yama v'keima. That is the precursor. Yan cho Hashem biyom tzara. And I'm wondering, maybe this is the time. Maybe this crazy magefa that the Ribono Shel Olam is allowing to exist. Maybe this is the challenge that's going to be before the final geula that's on our doorstep. He quotes a kliyakar here at the bottom. He says the same point that every day before alos ha'shachar, there is an intense darkness. And that is a natural phenomenon. That first there's darkness, and then there is light. There is a long discussion of this idea that before light is darkness. It's found in the Maharal. Rabbi Yehuda Lo, the great Jewish philosopher and thinker, the great Chassan Tzaddik, this is in Sefer called Netzach Yisrael and Perek Lamed Hei. Now the Maharal speaks about it in very stark terms, where he says every Havaya Chadasha, every new creation, his hefzed havaya rishona is the actually it's the absence that came before it which enables it to exist. So, for example, going back to the model of Bria's Ha'olam, the creation of the world, first there was destruction, there was absence, then there was creation. In talking about redemption, first there's going to be absence, there's going to be galus, exile, and then there's going to be the opposite, geula. Now, you can discuss, see some discuss whether or not this model of first destruction and then light and redemption and creation of the Maharal is synonymous with continuum. I saw there was an article who wanted to claim that this is not in consonance with our idea of Kimma, of Rav Kook's teaching of gradual process. I don't think it necessarily has to be. I think the Maharal could potentially agree with the continuum, but that's for a different time. The point is that the Maharal is making the same suggestion that before we talk about creation and redemption, there has to be a period of darkness. There has to be a period of difficulty. There's Laila, night before day. You know, many of us are focused now, hopefully, because we're in the middle of a magefa, of a plague. You know, the Torah quotes that David HaMelech instituted the recitation of 100 brachos a day. Mea brachos b'chol yom, which appears in the Gemara in Maseches Menachos. The reason why David HaMelech instituted is because they were in the middle of a plague and 100 people were dying every day. So they instituted this idea that a person should recite 100 brachos a day. So when I was looking into this at the beginning of the corona outbreak, thinking about Mea Brachos, so I came across a halacha sefer, a contemporary sefer, which I didn't see in the earlier Makoros, but I guess it makes perfect sense. That how do you calculate your 100 brachos? You follow the night. You start with last night and today. Within, between last night and today, we make 100 brachos. Because in halacha, how do we follow, how do we determine what constitutes a full day? We start with the night. Outside of the Beis HaMikdash, in the world of Kachim, it's not so surprising that in the world of Kachim, in the Beis HaMikdash, when it comes to sacrifices, that's the zone, the proximal area of Geula, of the light of God. So everything starts with the day. But in our world, in the physical world, in Olam Hazeh, you start with Laila, we start with the night, and then you go to the day. So what does the first Mishnah start in Shas? Me'ema Saikorna Shema. When do you start Shema? At night. Because the first part of your Jewish day starts at night. The night is the first step leading to the day. We say this and we experience it every year on Pesach. Rav and Shmuel have an argument how to do this, but everybody agrees. Maschil Bignus. You start with the difficulty, umesayim b'shevach, and you finish with shevach, with praise, right? That's the process of the Haggadah. So we start with mitchila ovdei avodah zarah hayu avoseinu, va'akshav kervanu hamakom lavodaso. There is a discussion of this at length, which can be found in the Baal HaSulam, Harav Ashlag, the great tzaddik who wrote a commentary on the Zohar, who talks about this, that the whole yesod, the fundamental principle of Geula is that it's predicated on the precedent, the precipitant, so to speak, of Geula, which is Galus. That's how he explains Maschil B'Gnus and Messiah B'Shevach. It's an explanation of the Zohar, that this is a deep Kabbalistic, I would say it's a mystery. That's part of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to understand about life. And that is perhaps the one of the messages and the expressions of Kfar Etzion. That in the process of redemption, in this Geula, first we had to, for whatever reason, it goes back to the secret of creation, there has to be first a hefsid, there has to be a destruction, and then there's a havaya, then there's an existence. First, there were attempts, bona olamos, there were Jews who went to settle, couldn't make it, there were massacres. Again, nachamol, setback. Starting again, and then a setback. But what happens? In 1967, Hanan Porat and a bunch of other ragtag little Jews, little Yidelach, so many of them were descendants of of Holocaust survivors. You know, who were Jews? They were standing on the brink of annihilation in the spring of 1967. And then the Ribbono Shel Olam just opens the gates. He just says, come home. Ufaratz to Yom of Akeim of Itzafon of Anegba. And after 19 years of desolation, all of a sudden, Gush Etzion now becomes part of the Jewish world. And so Hanan Porat begins this process that he began thinking about with these orphans. And he begins this process. He goes to Levi Eshkol and he has meetings and he builds and rebuilds this place, which is today a thriving center. So many people on this call, on this shiur, we know people who are living in these areas, in Alon Shvut and in El Azar and all these places. Who founded it? A bunch, ragtag yeshiva bachrin from Merkaz Harav, who had a vision of Geula, and they didn't despair after Churban. There was Machrivan, there were sequences of destruction, but they did not despair of the Bona Olamos, of the Geula that comes after the Hefzid. So much of the book about Hanan Porat's life is about his effort, together with others like Rav Yoel ben Nun, and this fellow, Moshko, who was one of the big Askanim, and the current Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivat Har Etzion, has several videos that Dov shared with me that I could share with you afterwards, of Rav Meidan being one of the first Talmidim who was approached by Hanan Porat. Hanan Porat himself could have been, that he referenced it in his talk that you saw a minute ago, just a little taste of his personality. He could have been the Rosh Yeshiva. At his wedding, it's described that the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivat HaKotel, where he also learned, pointed out about him that he had the Rosh Yeshiva's sharvit, literally means like the scepter, in his shtender. He was a gon adir, but instead of focusing in just the learning element of the Beis Medrash, he made it into the living embodiment of his life to build the land of Israel. That despite the fact that he was a child of this Churban, of this community that had been destroyed, he had the vision to see it through, to rebuild it. So now you come back to and understand the question that we started with. Why is it that Yom HaZikaron is before Yom HaAtzmaut? We mentioned that the date of the destruction, Lo Aleinu, Hashem Yikom Domo, the destruction of those Jews and the settlements and the kibbutz of Kfar Etzion took place on May 13th, 1948. That was a Thursday. What date was that? It was Dalet Iyar. Dalet Iyar! The next day, Friday, May 14th, 1948, Ben-Gurion and the whole Chevra get together in Tel Aviv. You know, the flag with the beard picture with Herzl in the back, the whole thing, Hakamas HaMedina, right? The day before that was the day of destruction of Kfar Etzion. So Moshko and others, they describe, they went to Ben-Gurion and they said, when are we going to memorialize the fallen? Well, what was the largest number at that time of Jews who were massacred before the Medina? It was the communities of Kfar Etzion and around it. So the reason that we observe the whole Yom HaShoah today on Dalet Iyar is because of this place and this concept. That even the secular leaders of Israel wanted us to understand that Yom HaAtzmaut, the process of Geula, is never divorced from the Churban, from the destruction, from the challenge of Yom HaZikaron. And that actually, part of that is to memorialize the fallen of Kfar Etzion, which was exactly on that day, the day before we celebrate. Now, I don't know if Ben-Gurion ever saw this Maharal. Levi Eshkol was very Yiddish. He spoke Yiddish. Maybe he knew this Maharal. Maybe he had a tradition. Maybe he knew this. But now we all understand it, that what Kfar Etzion represents is the path or the process or the cycle of Churban and Binyan. And hopefully we can take this as a great sense of chizuk, that even though it's a mystery, why it is that the Ribbono Shel Olam made it, that we have to go through Churban, that we have to go through struggle in order to get to Geula? Why it is that there had to be Bona Olamo Sumachrivan, there had to be secret destroyed worlds before we got to our world? That we don't know. But it gives us tremendous hope that whenever we face setbacks, we look at Kfar Etzion, we look at these Jews who had to wait 19 years. They went, left as orphan children, they came back as young adults, and they rebuilt. And now we are the beneficiaries. When we go to these places, you go to the visitor center, you go to the yeshiva, you go, you know, the wineries in the area, Efrat, all these places, they didn't come from nothing. They come from Hanan. The Ribbono Shel Olam gave a gift. Hanan, Porat, and his friends, they saw the vision of the Binyan after the Churban. It gives us chizuk. So hopefully each one of us in our lives, when we look to Kfar Etzion, we can always remember this idea. And when we experience Yom HaZikaron each year before Yom HaAtzmaut, we can see how the Ribbono Shel Olam is orchestrating this for us to understand that that is how we go through life. That's the process that we need to understand, that that's the way that the Ribbono Shel Olam wants us to connect to Him, to go through these cycles of Maskel B'Gnus and Messiah B'Shevach, but to remember that the Geula will come. The Harim, these mountains which were desolate, are ultimately going to be redeemed, and they're going to flourish beautifully.